So our speaker today is Marielle Ong of the University of Pennsylvania, and they will tell us about multiplicative global Springer theory.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity to speak. Happy New Year. I hope your holidays have been well. So I know that Perimeter is heavily focused on physics, and the only physics I've done is sometimes I moonlight as a mathematician for F-years, but that is not the subject of today's talk. Today, I'll be developing multiplicative global Springer theory, which is the body of my thesis. So let me begin with, what is Springer theory? So classically speaking, Springer theory revolves around the study of Springer fibers, which are fibers of the Grothendieck-Springer simultaneous resolution. The resolution takes a pair X with a Borel subalgebra containing X and maps it down to X. So the Springer fiber of X parameterizes Borel subalgebras that contains this X. So for an example, let your Lie algebra be SL2. Then the flag variety, the space of Borel subalgebras, parameterize full flags in C2. So if you have an element of your Lie algebra, X, then its Springer fiber will contain flags that are invariant under this X, this matrix. Now, one of the mysterious facts about Springer fibers is that the vowel group W doesn't act on the Springer fiber themselves, but it does act on its cohomology. And this was found by Springer in 1976. Now, there are many different constructions of these so-called Springer representations. One of the most notable ones is the sheaf theoretic way. So in 1981, Lustig constructed an action of W on this complex, see if my pen works, this complex, which encodes the cohomology of the Springer fibers, and this complex turns out to be a perverse sheaf. That is to say that it is the middle extension of a local system, right? So in some sense, the boring or nice Springer fibers control the bad or interesting Springer fibers. Now it stands to wonder, can we replicate the Springer theory in the local case, where the field K is replaced by a local field, or in the global case, where K is replaced by the function field of an algebraic curve? So in the local case, Springer fibers are replaced by affine Springer fibers, and they parameterize some kind of G bundles over a formal disk called Higgs bundles. As for local Springer theory, in 1996, Lustig constructed an action of the extended affine vowel group, this semi-direct product, on the homology of parabolic affine Springer fibers. So these fibers live in the affine flag variety. Unfortunately, there's not a nice sheaf theoretic way of doing this. So there is not a nice way to assemble all those affine Springer fibers in a geometrically manageable family. This is because the parameter of the Springer fibers, say this, like this gamma, lives in an infinite dimensional subspace, and upon which you can't really make sense of perverse sheaves and middle extensions. In the global case, we can achieve the sheaf theoretic way. So in the global case, Springer fibers are replaced by Hitchin fibers, which parameterize Higgs bundles over a curve. They are fibers of the so-called Hitchin fibration, so like something like this, which sends a Higgs bundle to its linear algebraic data. There are many things I can talk about Higgs bundles. I was a Higgs bundles person for a long time. But what I want to point out is that in 2011, Jue Yun constructed a parabolic version of the Hitchin fibration, and this is how he achieved his global Springer theory. So he constructed an action of the extended affine vowel group on the parabolic Hitchin complex, which encodes the cohomology of parabolic Hitchin fibers. And this is what he calls global Springer theory. Okay, so what we've discussed so far is essentially a theory about Lie algebras. So today, I hope to answer the question of whether we have a group theoretic or synonymously a multiplicative version of these, of what we've talked about. So whenever I say multiplicative, I really just mean group theoretic. Too many people has ask me about this. I just live by the name. I don't know why it's named like that. Okay, so in this talk, I hope to answer what is a multiplicative version of these fibers? What geometric objects do they parametrize? And in my thesis, I sort of answered the last two questions of, is there a parabolic version of these multiplicative fibers? And is there a multiplicative version of Yoon's global Springer theory? I hope to be able to cover all of this today. Now, before I can talk about the multiplicative version of these fibers, let me just give a brief review of affine Springer fibers and Hitchin fibers. Okay, so let's start with a split-connected reductive group G over an algebraically closed field K. Let F be the Laurent series ring, and let O be the power series ring. So the affine Grassmannian is basically a functor that sends a K algebra R to this quotient in the FPQC sense. So we have points in G defined over the Laurent series divided by points in G defined over the power series. This is basically a quotient of Luke groups. Now, the affine Grassmannian is not representable by a scheme, but it is the direct limit of an inductive system of schemes. And we call this an in scheme. So in fact, it's an in projective in scheme. Okay, so now fix a regular semi-simple element gamma over F. Is affine Springer fiber? It's a closed sub-in scheme of the affine Grassmannian, and it sends a K algebra R to the set. So I have points in the affine Grassmannian such that when I conjugate it with gamma, I land up in like the Lie algebra, but the points in the Lie algebra are defined over by the power series. Okay, let's take a look at an example. So let G be SL2C, where so K is like all complex numbers. When I plug this K into the affine Grassmannian, by definition, I should get this quotient. I have matrices in SL2 with coefficients in the Laurent series divided by matrices in SL2 with entries in the power series. Now, one can show that this quotient parametrizes projective O submodules called lattices. So the lattice is of the form E1O plus E2O, where E1 and E2 are like two-dimensional vectors in F, right? So this is like C, T, and two copies of it. Okay, so these lattices satisfy some conditions. The first condition basically says that the minimum order of the poles or minimum zero order of the zeros are bounded in some sense. And because we're in SL2, when we take the second exterior power of the lattice, we just get O plus O. So what does an affine Springer fiber look like in this affine Grassmannian? Well, if we fix gamma in a regular semi-simple element in little SL2, then its affine Springer fiber parametrizes lattices that are gamma invariant. So this should remind you of the Springer fiber example that we looked at the beginning of this talk. So in particular, if gamma is this particular matrix T0, 0 minus T, then one can show with some work that the affine Springer fiber is an infinite chain of P1s, which kind of looks like this. Okay, it's a very famous example. I think it's the example that everyone quotes usually. Okay, great. Now, as I promised, affine Springer fibers parametrize some geometric objects. So let D be the formal disk, and let D times be the punctured disk. Now, in 1993, Bovill and Laszlo found out that the affine Grassmannian parametrizes a G bundle on the formal disk with a trivialization over the punctured disk. So we have E and it trivializes somehow. Oh dear, accidentally did something wrong. Here we go. It trivializes to the trivial bundle E0 on the punctured disk. So what data does the affine Springer fiber add to that? Well, it adds a section phi of add E. And so, okay, I have a section phi of add E, which trivializes to gamma, the parameter of our affine Springer fiber. So this identification occurs over the punctured disk. So this parameterizes, this trivializes to E0 and gamma. So this is happening here. Okay, so this pair, so I'm talking about this two, this pair forms a Higgs bundle over the puncture, over the disk. And so I can see this trivialization as a trivial, as an identification between two Higgs bundles over the punctured disk. And so I now want to move towards some of this global setting, and let me start by defining Higgs bundles more rigorously. So let X be a complete smooth connected curve over K. When we move from the formal disk to the curve, we have to twist things by a line bundle to ensure that there is enough sections. So let L be a line bundle on X with some degree condition. And actually, it's just, there should be some, it's an at least property, not the strictly greater property. Okay. So an L-twisted G Higgs bundle over X is a pair consisting of a G bundle over a curve and a Higgs field. This is a section of add E times L. Now, these two are is equivalent to a map from X to this quotient stack. So here G acts by conjugation and GM acts by scaling. So when we mod out by GM in this quotient stack, we're really taking into account this twisting by the line bundle. So a Higgs bundle is equivalent to this map X from X to the quotient stack. This allows us to define the moduli stack of Higgs bundles. So the moduli stack sends a K scheme S to the groupoid of maps from X times S to this quotient stack, which essentially amounts to the groupoid of L-twisted G Higgs bundles over X times S. So that is the moduli stack of Higgs bundles. Okay, so I wrote it in this way because one of the usefulness of Higgs bundles is that they globalize phenomena from representation theory. So one famous phenomena that happens is the Chevalier morphism. So this is a map from the Lie algebra G to the quotient T mod W, which I denoted as C. By the Chevalier isomorphism theorem, there is an isomorphism between T mod W and the GIT quotient of little g by big G, where G acts on it by the conjugation or whatever. Okay, so an example of the Chevalier morphism is as follows. If you have little g as just like n by n matrices in C, then the Chevalier morphism would take a matrix, A, and send it to coefficients of its characteristic polynomial. So these are traces of wedge powers of A, right? So the Chevalier morphism takes a matrix and sends it to, you know, the space of characteristic polynomials. Now this Chevalier morphism induces a morphism of stacks. So we call this induced morphism the Hitchin vibration. It maps from the moduli stack of L-twisted G Higgs bundles E phi over X to this Hitchin base. And this Hitchin base is actually affine. Okay, so an easy example of this Hitchin vibration is when you set the group to be GLN. So when the group is GLN, a Higgs bundle consists of a vector bundle of rank N over X and a Higgs field, a section of NE times L. So it's essentially like a matrix, right? So the Hitchin morphism essentially takes your Higgs bundle E phi and sends it to coefficients of the characteristic polynomial of phi. When you do that, you're just left with sections of L. So that's why our Hitchin base kind of looks like this. Okay, right. So this is the Hitchin vibration. And let's say this tuple that's denoted by A. Now with this A, I can define a curve is X tilde of A as the zero locus of the characteristic polynomial, right? So this is like, this curve is basically like a curve of eigenvalues. Now in this Hitchin vibration, its fiber turns out to be the compactified Picard stack over this curve. So it parameterizes rank one torsion-free sheaves. So that is what the Hitchin fiber looks like. Okay, any questions so far? I'm probably barreling through, perhaps. No? Okay, all good. So there is a very intimate relationship between local affine Springer fibers and Hitchin fibers. And this comes in the form of the so-called product formula. It appeared in Neubauchau's Fields Medal winning proof of the fundamental lemma. And it basically says the following. So for very nice points A in your Hitchin base, right, you can take the pre-image of the regular semi-simple part in X and we call it UA. So let's say this is X, this is UA. It's open, dense, and non-empty. And so its complement will contain finitely many points. What the product formula says is that there is a homeomorphism of stacks between products of affine Springer fibers over those points and Hitchin fibers, which generically are like abelian varieties. So let me draw a torus. And also you have to modulo some like symmetry groups, and those symmetry groups are Picard groups. These are commutative group stacks. Yeah. So this, you have a product formula modulo some symmetries. Okay. This is very nice. Very nice indeed. So now I want to move on to the question of, okay, can we find a group diuretic or synonymously a multiplicative version of all of this? And I want to motivate this by taking a look at the definition of an affine Springer fiber. So when we want to talk about a group diuretic version, I want to replace this GO by something group diuretic, right? So I could replace it by big GO, but we just kind of recover the same theory as the Lie algebra group, as the Lie algebra's theory. So I want to consider a different generalization. In fact, I want to replace, I want to introduce co-character value poles into the picture. So, okay, so let me do this. So in order to introduce co-character value poles, I'm gonna replace GO with essentially a Schubert cell. So let's take a look at this. Every coweight, which is a map from GM to T, induces a map on the F points. So the image of this map is what we call T to the lambda. Okay, that's cool. So as we know, the affine Grassmannian emits a decomposition into a disjoint union of Schubert cells. A Schubert cell is basically a GO by GO orbit. And I just lost everything. Hold on a second. Sorry about that. A GO by GO orbit, and these are parametrized by dominant coweights. Now, when I take the closure of a Schubert cell, I just get a union of other Schubert cells that are parametrized by dominant coweights that are like smaller than lambda. This is like the usual ordering on dominant coweights. So a matrix version of the statement is the following. So let's say G is GLN, right? So particular, the affine Grassmannian is GLNF divided by GLNO. Then the Cartan decomposition statement really is equivalent to the following. Every matrix in GLNF can be reduced using column and row operations to this diagonal matrix. So this is like our T to the lambda. So in GLN, the coweight lattice consists of n integers. And so really you can see this as like t to the power of some integer, right? So every matrix can be row or column reduced into this diagonal matrix, which amounts to multiplying the matrix A on the left and right by matrices in here. So that's essentially another way of saying the Cartan decomposition, but for matrices. Okay, so that's just an example. So now we arrive to our definition of what is a multiplicative affine spring of fiber. So unlike affine spring of fibers, these are indexed by two pieces of data. We have a regular semi-simple element gamma over F and a dominant co-weight lambda. The multiplicative affine spring of fibers associated to those are sub-in schemes of the affine Grassmannian that looks exactly like this. So remember here, earlier, this was little g of O, and we've replaced it by a Schubert cell. Now, X, and we can also consider the closure, the closed version of this. So X lambda or gamma is an open sub-in scheme of X less than or equal to lambda of gamma. And this is a closed sub-in scheme of the affine Grassmannian. Okay. So this was defined by Kottwitz and Wiedemann in 2010 for representation theoretic reasons, but it was brought up again by Bouffier in 2012 in the context of Hitchin vibrations and Higgs bundles. And so that's why I mentioned his name here. One of the most interesting parts about this story is that we start overlapping into the world of number theory and arithmetic geometry. So in particular, these multiplicative affine spring of fibers are non-Frobenius linear variants of affine Deligne-Lustig varieties. So let me explain. What is an affine Deligne-Lustig variety? Well, usually what one does is that they define this field. So you have FQ, and you take the algebraic closure. Oh, sorry?
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
So are these the same as a moduli spaces solutions of Bogomol equations?
Of the monopole equations?
Yes. Wait.
Yes, I believe that's true. I'm still not very clear on like the rigor of those details, but yes, this was talked about in the work by Chris Elliott and Vasily Pascoun. Yeah. That's actually a lot of like interesting research directions there too. Okay, so what is an affine Deligne-Lustig variety? Then what one does is that you take the algebraic closure of FQ and you take the Laurent series with coefficients in that. In this space, you have a Frobenius morphism that takes T to T to the Q. Then an affine Deligne-Lustig variety is the following. They are points in GL mod GO, such that the conjugation is, how do I say this? Twisted by the Frobenius automorphism. So, and this lives in a Schubert cell. So this is what an affine Deligne-Lustig variety looks like. Right. So this definition is not so unfamiliar to us in some sense. In fact, there is a lot of parallels between multiplicative affine Springer fibers and affine Deligne-Lustig varieties. And sometimes the techniques in the number theory world feeds into the complex geometry world and vice versa. So that's very cool and interesting. Okay. Oh, yes. So before I move on, we want these multiplicative affine Springer fibers to parameterize some kind of global, some geometric objects, like some kind of bundles, right? Now, when we do that, when we move into this multiplicative world, we have to replace the Lie algebras with something. And the something is a Weinberg monoid. So what is the Weinberg monoid? Okay. So in this part, I'm just going to stick to simply connected semi-simple groups G over K. Let T be the maximal torus and Z be the center of G. Then I can define this enhanced group G plus, which is T times G mod Z, where Z embeds into T times G anti-diagonally. Now using the simple roots alpha I, fundamental weights omega I, and the irreducible representations of those fundamental weights, I can embed G plus into R copies of GM and R copies of the general linear group. Now to that image, take the closure and then take the normalization of that closure inside this space. That is what we call the Winberg monoid, right? So the Winberg monoid lives in A to the R times R copies of matrices. So this is a reductive monoid with unit group G plus. If we take the inverse image of AR times R copies of non-zero matrices, then we get something called the non-degenerate locus. This is a smooth, open, dense subvariety of the Winberg monoid. Okay. Now, the Winberg monoid is not just some random monoid that you find on the streets. It has a very fundamental universal property. So let me explain. So onto the Winberg monoid, you can act it on the left and right by G. When you take the GIT quotient of that, we form A of G, the abelianization. It is a commutative monoid with unit group TAD. TAD is the adjoint torus, so it's just T mod Z. And using the simple roots, one can show that the abelianization is isomorphic to A of R. So let this quotient map be alpha of G. So this is an extension of the map G plus, which is, let's just recall, this is T times G mod Z, mapping down to TAD, which is T mod Z. Right, so alpha G is like a monoid extension of that map. Now, what does the fibers of this abelianization look like? Well, so let me say this is TAD. Over one, it looks like G. But what happens over zero? Over zero is a very interesting fiber called the asymptotic monoid. And it basically captures the behavior of G at infinity. You can view it as like the asymptotic cone of a hyperboloid. And in this way, you can kind of view the Winberg monoid as a contraction of G to that asymptotic monoid. Right, so I think of V of G as like a deformation of the group itself. So the Winberg monoid is the universal monoid satisfying the following. It has a flat abelianization with reduced and irreducible fibers. So sometimes we call this universal monoid the enveloping monoid. Okay, so V of G is actually something very universal and special. So what do Winberg monoids look like? Well, when G is SL2C, we get something pretty familiar. The enhanced group is just GL2C. And with some work, you can show that the Winberg monoid is just matrices, 2x2 matrices. I'm hiding a lot of the details and its construction about, you know, having the simple roots and fundamental weights and so on, but this is what you get at the end of that. The abelianization in this case is just taking the determinant. So it sends TA and maps it to the determinant of A. Okay, so that's SL2. What about SL3? SL3 is way more complicated, as you can see here. I'm kind of just showing this to you for complexity and just to show that you get something non-trivial as you move to groups of higher rank. But this is essentially what you get from doing all of those computations. Okay, so you get something way more complicated. Now, at this point, I want to start making a connection between Winberg monoids and those multiplicative affine Springer fibers we talked about. So I do this by introducing a variant of the monoid. So let me define the affine scheme V lambda of G. V lambda of G is essentially like taking a fiber off the Winberg, taking a fiber of the abelianization over this point. And what we find is that with some computation, V lambda of G admits a Catan decomposition. And that's really our link between those multiplicative affine Springer fibers and the Winberg monoid. Let me also mention here that we can define V lambda 0 of G by replacing VG with V 0 of G. So when I do that, I get V lambda 0 of G. So it too said it too like admits some kind of decomposition as well, but it's like a very trivial decomposition. Okay. So slowly walking towards connecting affine spring of fibers with Weinberg monoids, what we need first is this condition. So the Kollwitz, let me define what the Kollwitz homomorphism is. So for every element, let's say gamma in G of F, there exists a dominant Kollwitz mu such that gamma lives inside one of those Schubert cells. The Kollwitz homomorphism then projects mu to the fundamental group, which is the quotient of the Kollwitz lattice with the Kollwitz lattice. So if this projection is exactly the same as the projection of lambda, then we can construct some element gamma lambda inside the enhanced group such that we can write the multiplicative affine spring of fiber in terms of the Weinberg monoid. So this is the equation that I want to really emphasize, right? So this Weinberg monoid is just some nice way of packaging this. And because of this starred equation, we then have a geometric interpretation of multiplicative affine spring of fibers. They parameterize, you know, G bundles on E with a multiplicative Higgs field, and as a trivialization of those over the punctured disk. So that is like the upshot of the Weinberg monoid. Sorry. Any questions on the idea of this or the logic or what's going on? Oh, right. I guess I should also mention here that for the closed version, we simply replace V naught of G with V of G. Okay.
So I can ask a naive question. So in the first line, this definition depends on the choice of a local param, local coordinate T, and then you showed basically that in the end it doesn't like it really is a global function. Where does the where how do you get rid of this dependence?
Wait, so I guess I didn't understand the question. So where is this local?
In the first line, you have to, the definition here. Depend on E, which is a local coordinate.
Here.
Yeah, and in the end, it doesn't depend on T anymore.
Ah, okay. Let me go back a few slides. Oh, well, actually, I can just write it here. So this is where the local parameter comes into place. So this guy, or this person, can be expressed as G plus O T to the, so what you do with lambda, right? I guess I might have glossed over this. Hold on, G plus O. Okay, so there is a map from the Kollwitz lattice of T to is adjoint. It takes lambda to the is adjoint image, I guess. Right. So when you're talking about G plus, right, the Kollwitz lattice of G plus is lambda mu inside here. And here, I am running out of space, such that lambda plus mu belongs to the Kollwitz. So that's why I have a pair of Kollwitz here, each of which depends on the lambda of AB. Does that sort of answer the question? That's kind of where the T to lambda bit comes into place. The key condition is that it's kind of this thing where the co-weight associated to gamma and the class of lambda, they have to belong into the same class in the fundamental group. Without this condition, I don't think you can write it like this.
Well, thanks.
That's okay. It's not a naive question. There's a lot kind of going on underneath the surface. Thanks for asking. Okay. Let's move on. This looks very messy. My apologies. Okay, so E and phi. Let's kind of do this in an orderly way. E and phi defines a multiplicative Higgs bundle. So let us transition to the global story. So what is a multiplicative Higgs bundle? So again, let X be a complete smooth connected curve over K. Let L be a T torsor. Then a multiplicative Higgs bundle is a G torsor on E with a multiplicative Higgs field. So again, we're twisting by the T torsor L, and we have the Winberg monoid in our description of the Higgs field. In the same way, we can define the moduli stack of multiplicative Higgs bundles as this like mapping stack, where you take maps to the quotient stack. Okay, so this is like very familiar. So in the world of monoids, we also have a Chevalli morphism. So it goes from VG to the so-called extended Steinberg base, which is defined as either the GIT quotient of VG modulo the adjoint, like the conjugation action by G. Now, by the Chevalier restriction theorem, this is exactly the same as VT mod W. So VT is like the Winberg monoid associated to T. It has a simpler description. You can take T times T mod Z and just take the closure of it in that space. Okay, so we now have three mappings, right? We have a Chevalier morphism, chi plus, and we have an abelianization map. Now, the Chevalier morphism has two parts, the abelianization and the normal Steinberg base. So this is like G mod mod G. As such, it is isomorphic to A to the 2R. So this isomorphism is created by simple roots and traces of those irreducible representations. As such, we can map from the extended Steinberg base C plus to AG just by projection. So this is just projection onto the first R factors or something, right? Now, because of this like multi-layered car park building of maps, it induces mappings on the mapping steps. And this amounts to like the multiplicative Hitchin vibration. So we get it as induced mappings of mapping stacks. We have going from M to A and A to B. Okay, any questions here? No? Okay, great. Cool. So we've kind of discussed all the multiplicative objects or introduced them. As you can see, a lot of it is very similar, but there are some noticeable differences. So for instance, in the Lie algebra theory, we have a unique constant section, but in the multiplicative theory, so we don't have a section, like we don't have a section of chi plus. What we have is a quasi-section. So a quasi-section means that, let's say F, a quasi-section means that when I compose it with chi plus, I just get an automorphism of VG. And there are many of them. There are many quasi-sections. So that's one, I guess, wrinkle. Another wrinkle is that when you look at the regular locus of the local fibers or even the global fibers, in the Lie algebra case, the regular locus is often dense inside the affine Springer fiber or Hitchin fiber. In our case, it is not dense. And in fact, there are many irreducible components outside of the regular locus. This sort of complicates a lot of the proofs, But it's more of a nuisance than anything. We essentially recover the same results, but just through different techniques. Okay, great. So the Hitchin vibration, the multiplicative version, was introduced by Franco and Ngo in 2011. They did this to give a geometric interpretation of orbital integrals. And since then, there has been an ongoing program to replicate everything in the linear theory to the multiplicative theory. And this program was essentially carried out by students of Ngo Bao Chao. So for instance, Boothier, a student of Ngo, studied these multiplicative affine Springer fibers in 2012. Another student sort of made things a lot more rigorous and proved the product formula, equidimensionality of the fibers, the dimension formula. In 2023, Griffin Wong, also another student of Ngo Bao Chao, proved the fundamental lemma for the multiplicative case. And me, who is not a student of Ngo Bao Chao, is trying to, I guess, continue this program. So in particular, I'm generalizing Yun's work to the multiplicative case. Okay, this is a good time. So let me talk about a bit of my work. Oh yeah, because I wasn't a student of Ngo Bao Chao, it was very hard to get a sense of what was going on. Okay, so let me, before I talk about what are parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fibers, let me talk about what do parabolic affine Springer fibers look like. So fix a Borel subgroup of G and define the Iwahori subgroup as follows. So let's just remember that G of O is just G of AT. I have an evaluation morphism that sends T to zero. And when I do that, I just get G to the K. Take the Iwahori subgroup as the pre-image of the Borel subgroup in G of K. So that is to say that elements of the Iwahori subgroups are like, they kind of look like this, and then there are like a bunch of T's in the lower triangular part. Because when it goes to zero, you're just left with an element of the Borel subgroup. Okay, so fix a regular semi-simple element gamma in your Lie algebra over F. A parabolic affine Springer fiber lives in the affine flag variety, and it looks very much like a normal affine Springer fiber, except I replace the affine Grassmannian by the affine flag variety, and I replace little g of O with the Iwahari subgroup. What does the multiplicative version look like now? Okay, so first, recall that the extended affine vowel group is an extension, sorry, it's a semi-direct product of W with the co-weight lattice. Now the affine flag variety emits a decomposition into cells, D cells, IWI, where they are indexed by elements of the extended affine vowel group. And of course, when you take the closure of those cells, you basically have like the Bruchhardt closure of the cells. Okay, what is a parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fiber? So fix gamma, a Lie group element that's regular semi-simple, and let lambda be a dominant co-weight. Then a parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fiber is given by these weird looking things. So, so when I conjugate gamma, I land up in basically a union of cells, but only defined by those co-weights. And here, I am acting W on lambda by like conjugation. So this is what I call W of, oh no, this is what I call W of lambda. Now, when I take the Bruchhardt closure of this, that amounts to taking the closure of this above thing. So that gives me the second line. So this is just me taking the Bruchhardt closure in the extended affine vowel group, that is. Okay, now this index set actually has a name. It is called the admissible set. So in the extended affine vowel group, we define the lambda admissible set as the set of elements in the extended affine vowel group that are less than T of X of lambda for some X in W, right? So in particular, I can write that last line, my parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fiber, as the follows, G in F O G, such that at G inverse of gamma is in here. IWI. Okay, now this definition is actually not so mysterious to people who know about Shimura varieties and arithmetic geometry. So this is where I would just like to mention some connections to arithmetic geometry. The admissible set actually shows up in the theory of local models. So these models are projective schemes that model the singularities of Shimura varieties. And if you take a special fiber of those local models, you would find that the special fiber looks like this. So that's very cool. Like, so this shows up in the special fiber of local models. It stands to wonder, what does this then, like, what role does this play in the theory of Shimura varieties? Well, the Frobenius version of those of these parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fibers is a group, turns out to be a group theoretic model of Newton strata of the special fiber. I should also mention that the admissible set is the support of a Bernstein function, which forms the basis of the center of the Iwahari-Hecke algebra, but we can leave that story for another time. This is just wanted to say that these parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fibers play in the interface of, you know, arithmetic geometry and Shimura varieties and so on. So that's like a much bigger story here. I'm a complex geometer, so this is sort of a little bit above my pay grade. I usually try and stay away from prime numbers as much as I can, but I find myself drawn more towards it as I study this. Okay, so what does the admissible subset look like? So you can actually picture the elements of the admissible subset. So because there is a correspondence between elements of the affine vowel group, so this is a semi-direct product of W with the co-root lattice. It's a normal subgroup inside the extended affine vowel group. There's a correspondence between those elements and LCOs in the Bruchhardt-Titz building. And so you can actually picture those elements as like LCOs. So this is the example for g equals to GL3 and lambda equals to minus 1, 0, 0. I also included another example for the general symplectic group of rank 4 and for a different lambda. So as you can see, the admissible set looks sort of combinatorially complicated. That's why these things are not very easy to study. Okay, great. So now that we've defined what a parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fiber looks like, we can start moving on to the global theory. So it's very much the same as the normal theory. A parabolic multiplicative Higgs bundle is a quadruple of points on the curve, E phi, a multiplicative Higgs bundle, and a B reduction over that point. And of course, phi has to be compatible with that B reduction. It turns out that also in this monoid theory, we have a monoid version of the Grothendieck simultaneous resolution. Just want to point out that in this resolution, Vg of tilde parameterizes elements in the Winburg monoid and Borel subalgebras or Borel subgroups such that X is contained in the Winburg monoid associated to that Borel subgroup. Okay, so that's just essentially a similar picture here. With that, we can now define what is the moduli stack of parabolic multiplicative Higgs bundles, and they fit into this Cartesian diagram where this is induced by the Grothendieck simultaneous resolution for monoids, Grothendieck simultaneous resolution. And this map is just taking the parabolic Higgs bundles, E phi, EBX, and forgetting the B reduction. So I just get e phi x. In the same way, we can define what is a parabolic multiplicative Hitchin vibration. So this time, fibers of this vibration now depend on two pieces of data, a and x, right? So it looks, we have to, the parabolic Hitchin fibers look like this. Okay. So, results. So a lot of this is basically follows the theme of, here's a new object, and let me try and study the geometric properties of this object. A lot of this is just world building and or theory building. And a lot of it luckily falls from, you can use the same results as earlier research onto this. So for instance, I proved the non-emptiness pattern. I was also able to find like a monoid version of the Iwahori subgroup, and which allows me to express the parabolic multiplicative Hitchin fibers, sorry, multiplicative parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fibers in terms of the Iwahori monoid. I was able to prove the dimensions of these things. So the dimensions, the results about the dimensions of these is actually a very interesting story. In the arithmetic geometry world, it's very hard to prove the dimension of an affine Abelian Lustig variety. So in fact, thanks to the work of Hei Yu, Sadu Khan, and Hei again, they were able to show that there is a relationship between the dimensions of parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fibers and normal multiplicative affine Springer fibers, and it differs by this Springer fiber. Now, the proof of this is highly combinatorial. It relies heavily on the combinatorics of the extended affine vowel group. And at the time, they didn't understand what was like the geometric connections between these fibers and the Springer fiber. What you can get out of the Winberg monoid is that you can now get a geometric, when you view things as like multiplicative Higgs bundles, you now get a geometric perspective of what this dimension formula is saying. Okay, similarly, you can, using proofs by Chi and global methods, you can prove the equidimensionality of parabolic multiplicative affine Springer fibers and also the product formula. Okay, how much time do I have? I have about 5 minutes. So what about global Springer theory? Multiplicative global Springer theory basically falls from the normal global Springer theory, but you just have to restrict everything to the right locuses or the right loci. So for instance, you can introduce, there shouldn't be B's here. You can introduce a parabolic Hecke stack, which parameterizes two copies of parabolic multiplicative Higgs bundles with an identification between them. And what you wanna do is you wanna restrict this to very ample elements. Oh yeah, so let me recall that, just so we know, so this is the Hitchin, parabolic Hitchin vibration. There is an abelianization underneath it. And if we restrict to nice elements down here and to a certain loci up here, we get exactly what we want. So this is the restriction of those things. So we restrict to very ample points B inside the abelianization part, and we restrict to this loci here where a certain co-dimension estimate holds. Once you do that, all of the normal proofs kind of follow in the same way. So in particular, there is a right action of the extended affine vowel group on the parabolic Hitchin stack, such that the Hecke stack breaks up into a disjoint union of graphs. Because of the co-dimension estimate, each of those graphs defines a well-defined map on the parabolic Hitchin complex. So the assignment of W to this, to each of those endomorphisms, defines an action of the extended affine vowel group on the parabolic Hitchin complex. So this is essentially global Springer theory, except that each of those complexes has to be restricted to B, you know, points on the abelianization. Okay, So let's round this up with like future directions. So multiplicative affine Springer fibers is a very new object. Not a lot about it is known. So some future directions include the following. I can continue generalizing Yoon's global Springer theory. So I can, for instance, extend the action of the affine vowel group to an action of the graded Daha. I could study the endoscopic decompositions of the parabolic Hitchin complex. But what I'm more excited about is studying multiplicative non-abelian Hodge theory. Not a lot is known about the stack of multiplicative Higgs bundles. So we don't know about hypercalor structure. We don't know about integrable systems. So I think it would be a really cool question to try and establish. You know, non-abelian Hodge theory says that Higgs bundles corresponds to flat connections and representations of the fundamental group. And what does this three-way correspondence look like in the multiplicative case? I think that's a very cool question. Another question that would be super interesting is, of course, the mathematical physics question. So Chris Elliott and Vasily Pastun established a connection between multiplicative Higgs bundles, periodic monopoles, and some five-dimensional twisted gauge theory, but they never talked about the geometry of the Winberg monoid and the representation theoretic properties of it. So I think there would be a nice formal and abstract framework kind of lying there. So I think that would be very cool to study. And yeah, I'm just gonna end there. Thank you very much for listening.
All right, thank you very much. Are there any questions? Oh, yeah, Davide.
Hi, so is this, I missed something. So you find these multiplicative Higgs bundles on a general Riemann surface, correct? Perhaps it probably punctures even. Are they complex symplectic manifolds?
Like is the space of multiplicative Higgs bundles complex symplectic? Is that the question?
Yes.
Right. That is actually hasn't been proved yet. We expect it to be, I guess. But
for any surface?
Sorry?
For any Riemann surface, only for a cylinder.
Oh, I see. Yes, for any Riemann surface, no one has talked about or proved its complex symplectic structure.
But do you expect it to be true for any Riemann surface or only for special ones?
I suspect it to be true for the smooth ones, for the smooth Riemann surfaces. Punctured ones, I'm not so sure.
Because, correct me if I'm wrong, the examples where we know it's complex symplectic are the ones that come from K-theoretic Coulomb branches, correct?
The examples that we know are complex symplectic structures.
I mean, there are definitely, sorry, you mentioned that these are solutions. Some of the spaces are solutions of Bohm-Mondel equations.
Yes, yeah.
K-theoretic Coulomb branches.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Either of those definitions would come with a complex symplectic structure.
Yes, yeah, sorry. Yes.
But I think those tend to give you things on the plane or the Rossi star, maybe, or maybe the torus, but not on a general. I don't think so.
I think generally it's not known, but yeah. I know that Elliott and Pastun's work was for P1, I believe, with some punctures.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, plane or C-star, they're all CP1s.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Right, but shouldn't, Higgs bundles on any Riemann surface, don't those have a...
It's difficult, this.
Right, because they're basically a cotangent bundle.
Yes.
These are all...
So, I mean, wouldn't that also be true here?
So there are phase spaces when you can define for each ensemble theory. Usually you will need perhaps one form on that surface or something like that. I don't know if in the data that you're providing, is there anything like one form on the surface?
Yeah, I didn't really look into this part. But I know that I think it is some kind of shifted cotangent space.
I thought the multi-computer
you're incorporating
case was...
The line bundle changes it, right?
Yeah.
Is that the part I was missing?
That's right. You can't really have the line bundle in the multiplicative case.
I see. That messes up the symplectic structure. Okay, that makes sense. Right.
It's more like a tangent bundle than a cotangent bundle.
Ah, okay. Ah, right. Yes, actually, that's true.
There are any other questions?
Yeah, okay. Sir, I wanted to ask a very simple one. Is there like some simple example? Like, what is the simplest and trivial example in which you can describe this multiplicative Higgs bundle explicitly?
G equals to SL2, I guess, because in that case, the Winberg monoid is just matrices in SL2. Actually, no, GL2, my bad. It's just matrices. And so for SL2, it would just be like an SL2 Higgs, an SL2 affine Springer fiber, right? But in higher cases, let me go up to here. Like SL3, say, the Winberg monoid already starts getting very complicated.
But this is local version. Are there any examples of simple non-local examples, or it becomes too complicated?
It becomes too complicated.
Okay.
One can try.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask another question?
Yeah,
of course.
So if there's not this line bundle, I can think of the six fields as part of a flat connection on the surface by changing how the group acts on this Higgs field. Is there a similar version in the multiplicative case?
Oh, is there like a connection view of Higgs bundles? That is a very interesting question. I think it was talked about in Elliott and Pestun's work. But again, they didn't really talk about, they didn't inject this Winberg monoid formalism into it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But what would this moduli space have? I guess like in the multiplicative version of this, what is this space characterizing? Instead of like a flat connection, what is it?
I'm not sure, but I would imagine it be some connections with some meromorphic behavior. Or some like kind of, yeah. See, it will have some.
It's a difference equation in the work of Pestun and Elliott.
Right.
A multiplicative Higgs bundle is a G bundle with an automorphism, and they need to form it to a G bundle with an isomorphism between it and its translate by some automorphism of the curve.
I see. Right. I see. So that multiplication is kind of an integration of this flat connection along the.
Exactly. Yeah.
I see. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
And this also sends to to me like kind of a rephrasing of this sort of non-abelian Hodge theory of, you know, thinking about it in these different complex structures, right?
Right.
So would that be a sort of thinking about it in some different complex structure from the one that you're considering?
Yes, yeah.
All right, great. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, I just want to ask quickly. So you mentioned arithmetic. Do you see any connection or any applications of your work to number theory, or is that just too far right now?
Perhaps a little too far ahead, but I believe that I think whatever results that we gain from here can guide what the results in the arithmetic world should look like, and also vice versa. So studying these multiplicative affine Springer fibers, there's a lot of parallels to affine Deligne-Lustig varieties, like for example, this. And so, yeah, I believe like one feeds into the other. I think possibly these things are way more easier to study than the affine Deligne-Lustig varieties, only because arithmetic geometry is kind of hard.
Yeah, thank you.
That's one way to put it. All right. So has everyone asked other questions? All right, well, let's thank Marielle again.